Tubby, Twin, question?
Yes, Paul. Well, one second. I just want to say that one of the things that drives me a little crazy, not anyone else that I'm aware of, is the astronomers only consider the only non-metal to be hydrogen. And yet, if you place a hydrogen under particular circumstances, if you apply enough pressure at a certain temperature, you can develop a state where you have metallic hydrogen. So the only thing that isn't a metal is a metal. That's something that just drives me a little bit wacky, but again, most people don't really care. Yes, Paul?
I'm curious about what Jeff said. He went by a little too quick for me. Is he talking about these lenses generating the x-rays, or is he using the lenses to detect the x-rays? You know, I'm just curious how they actually detect the x-rays. Because, you know, I'm comparing it to the space telescopes, and they have these long tubes, you know, and they're one inside the other. Because they're long, you know, the x-rays that come flying through, they say won't hit a flat plate. So it's really like skimming along the wall, and then toward the bottom, you know, they tend to come together, and that's where they have the CCDs, you know, to pick it up to make a picture. Do they have these long types of things when they're detecting x-rays? I know they don't. You know, they come out with this flat plate, you know, you go check your bone and it looks like a flat plate. But, why is there a difference? Maybe there isn't. Maybe there's little tiny long tubes inside the flat plate. What do I know? Anyway, that was the question for Jeff. This is Paul, WS2N.
I'm going to turn it back to Roy for a second to address the medical x-ray detection. He knows a lot about that. I know a little bit about it, but he knows a lot about it, and he's going to address that, and then I'll address what I know about Fresnel lenses for x-rays and how they differ from the visual Fresnel lenses, Roy.
Well, thanks for the confidence. I'm really not, don't have that much technical expertise in that. I come from the very early times when we used actual silver halide film to react with x-rays and produce films. The sensor devices, I'm not really that familiar with how they differ with visible light detection. I'm sure the sensor element is tweaked specifically for the energy potentials. The Fresnel objects are lenses to focus x-rays. But Jeff will have more details on that. I mean, do you have any particular specifics with the semiconductor materials used in X-ray detectors? Because I don't particularly know what blend of minerals they use these days.
I also started it in crystallography when we were doing photographic detection, and then later on when it became phosphor imaging film. But those were essentially, those detectors were just a flat field, right? And they were set up behind whatever it was you were trying to image. In your case, you're trying to image an object which had differential absorption, like a bone versus tissue. And in my case, we were looking for X-ray diffraction intensities, which were separated from background. And there would be just a regular array of spots. When it comes to common detectors now, we actually went from while I've been doing crystallography, we went from the film to the phosphor detector to a CCD detector, which had a phosphor on the face of a what would you call a taper, a fiber optic taper, where they took many, many fiber optic filaments, put them together, and then melted them and squished them down on one end and kept the other end large, such that all of the image on one end would appear on the other end, but it would be much smaller. So you put the fiber, you have the X-ray diffraction, you hit the the phosphor imager. That would be welded to the face of the taper, and then the image would go down these filaments to a tiny little version of that at the other end, which had been miniaturized by melting, and then that would be welded to the face of a CCD camera QSL.
Okay, so they don't have specialized charge carrier detectors that are tuned for X-rays. It's just the visible light. It's a secondary emission from the original X-ray emission.
Yeah, AC2PL. Yeah, Roy, they've moved to the next generation, which is direct detection. And it's not necessarily a charge couple device, but it actually interacts directly with an X-ray photon, so it's a one-to-one coupling. We no longer have the phosphor image of the or the taper. So now they've eventually scaled up into a large enough device that it's an area detector where you have pixels which effectively have no, they're direct detectors of X-rays, and they have no point spread function, which means there's no spillover from the next pixel to the next. And there's, I think the, I would say that the detection range is no longer the way it was with CCDs, which was say 64,000 bits. It was 8 bits, 64,000, one part, 64,000. Sorry about that. So it's actually much more closely to, I think, one part in, say, a million.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I kind of suspected that. You know, the big problem with solid state is you have to figure out something with the energy levels to be the approximate energy level of the photon you want to get absorbed. And, you know, some things were relatively easy, like the red LEDs, but it took science 30-plus years to get to the blue LED. And, you know, finding semiconductors that absorb X-ray energies, you know, it's just a matter of time and money. Obviously, probably a lot of money in developing those types of semiconductors. And, you know, any idea what vague term they give for these materials? Is it anything related to good old gallium indium or anything?
ACTPL, I wish I could say something more intelligent, but I'm not even going to try and fake it, Roy. But the one thing I will try to say something smart about is the Fresnel lenses. For visible lenses, actually, Fresnel lenses are one lens which is cut down in a circular manner and, like, compressed into two dimensions, in a sense. Fresnel lenses for X-rays are just, I think they're much more like different thicknesses of layers. It's also semi-two-dimensional, but it's thicknesses of layers becoming much more concentric circles, becoming tighter and tighter as you either approach or go away from the fiducial point.
Oh, okay. I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot. Do you have any idea what kind of materials they use for X-ray purposes as opposed to visual light, where people just use, you know, transparent glass-like materials?
AC2PL. I think it's actually a metal material, and I can understand your frustration with me stating that I might understand something about this and then saying I don't, but I think that it is not transparent to X-rays, and that it lets let X-rays come through and interact with the edges of these materials. I don't know if the slit width has anything to do with it. I haven't studied it extensively because all the X-rays that I use in the lab are reflected off of either multi-layer crystals, either crystals that are that have multi-layer material deposited on them, or actually using the planes of atoms and silicon, say, off of a particular plane. say the 220111 or whatever, or as we stated before, using just X-rays that are coming off of a particular material which generates monochromatic X-rays, QSL.
West to end.
Yes, Paul.
I've been listening to both of you guys. I think I put two and two together. With not with you know the technical part of it, but you know I was curious about the X-ray. You know, when you have an X-ray machine and you put your hand in front of it, you're interested in seeing what the bone looks like. You don't care what the X-rays you know started out as. You don't care what they look like. You just want some kind of X-ray field to come through, and then because the bones are interfering with it, you're going to get some kind of a picture on the other end. What I was thinking about was like the Chandra Space Telescope, and there's a couple of things like that in space now, and they look at X-rays. They want to see what the galaxies look like in X-ray. So the idea is not to disturb the X-ray pictures that are coming from space. They actually want to see what those look like. They're not interested in putting your hand in front of the detector, and using it as an X-ray machine. They want to see what the actual X-rays started out as. To actually see the galaxies or black holes, or whatever they're looking at. So I thought about that years ago, and I that's the answer I was looking for. Something Jeff said. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Okay. I mean, ultimately, yeah, you're right. NASA is looking at directly at the X-ray emissions and trying to figure out what's going on out there. Jeff is looking at the diffractions and interference patterns as X-rays travel through a crystal material, and doctors are just looking at the amount of transmission of X-rays going through different density organs in a human body.
Yeah, that sounds good. That really does. And there's a couple more telescopes out there, and a couple more being built using that the same idea. There's these long tubes, multiple feet, 30, sometimes 20, 30 feet long, and they graze along the sides of them, But, okay. Sounds good, Roy. Back to you.
Yes, Jeff?
I'm just wondering if there's some requirement of the composition of those tubes in order to make such a high internal reflectance. I think that's what Paul's talking about, is that it has extremely high internal reflectance such that the grazing incidence causes all the X-rays to be collected depending on where that tube happens to be pointed. Do you think so, Roy?
Well, yeah, probably. The problem that as you mentioned earlier, with X-rays, they're difficult to kind of manipulate them. They are what they are, and so people have come up with all kinds of clever devices to restrict them and to control them in some way or another. Just touching back on the previous comment you made, there are metals that are that are opaque in visible light that are transparent on X-rays. So even though it's a metal and it appears opaque, may not necessarily mean that it acts as an opaque object purely for reflection when it's being used as a Fresnel lens. I have to kind of look it up because you've interested me in exactly what's going on with the X-rays. I would still tend to sort of think that it might be some differential thickness of something that is transparent in the X-ray spectrum, but you could be right. It could be a completely different phenomena that they're using.
And Roy W.S. Glenn. I think I have it anyway. I think they're about, 20 or 30 feet long. They're long on the Chandra X-ray telescope. And they start off like an inch and a quarter in diameter, near the aperture. And then it's like a big bundle of pipes that are, you know, ganged together in a bundle, and it's focused. You know, they narrow down toward the end, and I believe that they're mirrored aluminum, if I remember. I'd have to go back and look. But yeah, they say if it was flat, the X-rays would just go right through them. So they need to have it hit the sides, and you know, they more or less, they use the word grazing down the sides of the tubes until they get down to the bottom. And some kind of detector. I don't know if it's a. I always thought it was a CCD, but I don't know. Something Jeff said. Maybe it's something else besides that. But somehow they've got to get it to an electrical signal to eventually transmit to Earth as a picture. And they have some beautiful pictures. If you look up Chandra X-ray telescope pictures, and been I think it's been up there since like 1990 something. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, thank you, Paul. I was thinking, you know, in my head, you know, maybe it's some kind of a collimator. Usually, that's more for an emitter than for a detector, though.
I know this is definitely a detector. Yeah. Launched by one of the shuttles.
Okay. It only goes to show that you know, science has many, many, many layers, and as you peel them away, there's more complicated ones underneath each of them. So, now, interesting subject. X-ray machines certainly have revolutionized medical science. A couple of times, simple planar, you know, two-dimensional plate-driven X-rays, and then computer tomography-generated X-ray images have changed a lot of aspects of medicine through the years. Well, I thank you, Jeff, for participating and giving us some material to work with. We're struggling here a little bit. We still got about a half hour if anyone's interested. So if anyone has any subjects that they would like to touch upon or comment about something previously touched upon, you know, some of our usual people who like to chat about artificial intelligence, I think, are not around tonight. So we don't seem to have an opportunity to get into that mess. I found an interesting new book on the subject written by a guy with a PhD in machine learning who tends to think that maybe about 70% of all this AI is kind of a bit of a grift, a bit of a scam to pop the value of everyone's stock. And he wrote an interesting book. Perhaps next Sunday, in addition to my links on my link page, I'll write a little book report, and you people can read it and decide whether you want to read this guy's book or not. But it gives an interesting observation to the back room, you know, where the sausage is being made for artificial intelligence. Anyway, this continues to be AC2GS and the Limewire Technical Net. If anyone has any comments or questions or topics, please hit that push to talk.
I think that there are a lot of scams when it comes to AI, especially with people that are using AI from actual people to kind of mislead you into something, even though it may not really seem true, and it's been going on quite frequently. KD2OGB, Mobile, Hicksville.
Hey, C2PO.
Yes, Jeff?
Sorry, I didn't want to step on that other station. He came in before me.
Okay, getting, we'll touch on you, Craig, first, and then we'll go to Jeff. I think it goes every which way. There are people using artificial intelligence to scam people, and there are people saying that they're using artificial intelligence to scam people. You've heard of reports of automated AI grocery stores, only to find out that there's a bunch of people looking through video cameras in India and fulfilling all of the necessary things that the AI was supposed to. So, you know, the only kind of constant in this equation is humanity. Human beings will try and grift off each other. So it's going in both directions when it comes to artificial intelligence. There are people trying to get away with things by using artificial intelligence. There was that guy in Scotland who was going to have a theme event of Willy Wonka, and he had AI-generated images and AI-generated dialogues and AI-generated everything, and it was a complete disaster. But again, there are other guys who don't really use the AI, but they claim to use the AI, and they get people to invest in all kinds of products that can't yet be developed, but they get the seed money. So it goes both ways. But that the only consistent thing is humanity. Humanity will always grip other human beings.
Actually, let's turn my AC off here. Actually, if you follow YouTube long enough, Roy, and so have I, AI has become very big into misleading people, but other people use it for memes and silly stuff. And believe it or not, people use programs to make AI voices of our presidents. I mean, for silly stuff, that's one thing, but unfortunately, the programs and YouTube are now telling you, you cannot use these people's voices in a way that could interfere with the election, like our current presidents that are up for election. Not going to go into details on that, but people have even used past presidents that are long gone just for memes and such. Some of it's very silly, and some of it may not be silly, but that's the more popular thing that's been going on right now on YouTube of AI presidential stuff.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of deep faking that's going on, and it's still very common among famous people. Non-famous people, you don't care, and people don't bother. About, I think, 4 or 5 months ago, I synthesized my voice, and I just typed a introductory and had it play the audio, and then after it was done, I came on and said that I didn't say any of that. It was artificial intelligence. So there's that going on, but there's so many other layers of nonsense going on. What annoys me much more than the artificial voice synthesis of famous people is the voice synthesis of generic people. There are a lot of canned YouTube presentations where if you don't listen closely, you don't realize that it's not an actual person reading a script. It's an electronic artificial intelligence synthesizing a monologue. And occasionally it mispronounces words in a very weird, non-human way that is a giveaway. That, or you can sometimes recognize the standard voices that are relatively cheap and easy to use. So I find the synthetic voices of people to be tedious after a while. And I find that a lot of the material that they're speaking sounds like it's coming from an AI as well, which can be really tedious. You know, once you figure out the cadences of these AIs, they become not that difficult to figure out.
Yeah, again, some of these AI clips do seem pretty funny, but the topics that they talk about are not exactly pretty if you listen to certain ones. I'm not going to state exactly which ones, but if you go on YouTube and look up some of them actually are funny that relate to the presidents that have nothing to do with elections and things like that. But some of it, I just seem so attracted to. I'm sure the real people have seen them by now, and of course the Secret Service, but more than likely they're not amused by it and probably do not care.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure they're not amused, but sometimes there's something called the Streisand effect. If you make people aware of something to try and get rid of it, it just ends up with more people being aware of it. Did you ever see the YouTube channel called, I believe it's Scared Ketchup?
I think I've heard of it. Do tell.
No, it's an example of what you just said. They deepfake political people and modify their appearance, and they use synthesized voices. And he's got a decent sense of humor. Sometimes it's a little on the vulgar side, but, you know, he usually comes out with something about once a week these days.
Ah, I think I'll have to look that up. For whatever reason, I'm not hearing W2VL beep after I let you talk, but I'm hearing it after you talk.
Okay, I don't know how it's wired up, so I can't really tell you if Lou or someone in the technical department of the repeater wants to throw in a reason for why that happened. Feel free, Lou, or anyone else who's connected with the repeater. Nah, Craig, I think that was a no comment. Well, you know, I mean, you know what repeater you're going through. You don't really need an audio cue, do you?
Nah, like, I can hear the beep after you talk, but as soon as I'm done talking, you jump right on without a beep for whatever reason. Eh, it doesn't matter. As long as the repeater doesn't time out, I don't care. But yeah, AI stuff for celebrities and our presidents has been very big these days. And unfortunately, it's going to have to eventually slow down when November comes, because YouTube and these programs that you can create these people are really starting to crack down on that stuff.
Well, we'll see. Unfortunately, there's almost an infinite number of places that will do that service for you, and I'm sure some of them are out of the country, so they're not going to really change their ways due to the United States. But, you know, you have to kind of take it for what it's worth. You can't believe things that sound like a person that you know or looks like a person that you know, and it's only going to get worse. Like I said, I can kind of tell glitches. The one giveaway to computer-generated images of human beings is to look at fingers and look at legs, and it seems to forget how many fingers human beings have. And so, you know, it's a dead giveaway where the way the fingers are mangled in a lot of AI. So that's the future, unfortunately. I don't know of anything that's ultimately going to solve it. Again, as the technology improves, as the algorithms improve, as the silicon gets more and more powerful, it's going to be more and more difficult to discern that it's an artificial source for whatever you're looking at. That might be good for some purposes and awful for others, but it's our future.
While the memes don't really seem that entertaining, I mean, I feel like the more appropriate one that I've probably seen is AI playing video games. I think that's where it seems a little fun to watch. But enough on that. But yeah, when you get a chance to go on YouTube, do type up AI presidential stuff, and you might actually like some of it. It's kind of funny. But we'll move on with that topic, because you never know who else could be listening in here that probably might not like that kind of stuff.
Okay, Craig. Well, thanks for participating tonight. I appreciate it. Jeff, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, Roy. I'm really not sure what to say about that previous iteration. However, we have I'm sure you've heard of this in the scientific field of protein folding. You might have heard of protein fold at home or something akin to that, where you use some of these CPU cycles on your home computer to do certain calculations, QSL.
Yeah, I remember. It's been around for a long, long time. There was a time that I ran it just to kind of see how it works. I think they kind of covered the screen. It was the idea at that time was it was a screensaver, so it didn't have severe CPU image manipulation. It just kind of darkened the screen, and behind it it did some processing for protein folding algorithms and such. I assume it's still around. I haven't really used it much because I tend to squeeze as many CPUs as I can out of my desktop these days.
Yeah, Roger. And I do hear your overbeep, no problem. That program was written out of a group in the University of Washington, led by David Baker, who's a friend of ours who at Einstein. We've worked with him extensively on modeling a variety of proteins. So what, you know, what their, well, what their kind of second generation or third generation of approach was to include a lot of physics and external forces to the concept of protein folding, and taking a polypeptide chain and then trying to figure out what it would fold up to, what sort of protein configuration it would make at the end of the day. And AlphaFold, which is the next generation of that, which is a deep, quote-unquote, the deep learning model of that, has come along, and we've gone through three iterations of AlphaFold, AlphaFold 1, 2, and 3, which has some sort of deep learning back end. And I wonder if you've heard of AlphaFold QSL?
No, unfortunately, I haven't. I haven't been keeping up with that. But for the people out there that don't quite know, you know, proteins are incredibly important things that we produce that do all kinds of things for us. Some of them are enzymes that break apart things, catalysts that accelerate things, all kinds of fun stuff. And they are a collection of amino acids. But it's not just the combination of, you know, which one's first, second, third, fourth, or fifth. It's how the protein or polypeptide ultimately folds and exposes charged areas and hydrophobic areas and hydrophilic areas. So the folding in three dimensions of a series of polypeptide chains are the proteins that make life possible. And to the extent that in some cases we do not code directly for the protein, we code for a precursor that's larger than the protein, so that when the precursor is exposed to the right environment, it folds in the correct structure, and then it removes the excess baggage that allowed it to form. So modeling proteins in three-dimensional are incredibly important in medicine and biology in general. But no, I haven't really kept up with it. I would assume the front-end software is identical, because there's no real reason why it needs to change.
That's absolutely correct, Roy, in every regard. Taking a protein which has essentially a very large number of components in a long string, trying to figure out how they fold is the same as trying to figure out how to ball of yarn, if you like, take it and extend it and then, like, mush it up into a huge ball in your bag, and then trying to figure out what it looks like is the same. It's the same exact thing. There's almost an infinite number of ways that it could turn out. And strangely, in biology, if you take the same exact polypeptide sequence in nature, every single time you make that same polypeptide inside a cell, it folds exactly the same way. It doesn't turn into a goober of string in your bag the way, you know, yarn would. But there's more to it. There's people that are trying to predict that, and that's what I wanted to talk about for another 5 minutes, if that's okay, Roy.
Sure. I just mentioned earlier that, you know, sometimes you would think that just efficiency, it would have the plans for the protein, spit out the protein folds, and you're in like Flynn. But a lot of times biology is stuck with producing precursors that are bigger and more expensive to build, but by building the precursor with extra amino acids, you'll have a molecule that actually folds in the correct way. So I just, you know, it, again, layers of complication upon complication, but, you know, that's what I like about science in many ways. But please, Jeff, you know, you got your 5 minutes.
Yeah, Roger, Roy. I won't even go into introns and exons. Let's just back it up to Google DeepMind, which is the program we're talking about. They came up with a program which is called AlphaFold, and has this this algorithm which has some sort of learning, and it's supposed to take a in a very simple way, Roy, take a polypeptide or amino acid sequence and then do a calculation and give you what it thinks the folding will be. And in a lot of cases, in version 1, it was slow and clunky and the interface was bad. This is version 2, it was slow and clunky and it did a little bit better. And in version 3, it's extraordinarily fast and it gives you really amazing views of what the proteins should be, especially the ones that are well represented already in the structural databases. And then for the things that it doesn't understand, that it gives you absolutely nothing. It gives you garbage. So I'm not sure where to go from here. I mean, we're at version 3 of Google DeepMind, where they're giving us exactly what we know exactly exists in nature, and nothing more, or nothing less. We'll tell you offline a couple things that it actually predicted quite correctly, which it should not have known, but everything else that it's predicted has been things that it really should have known, and it's been, in my opinion, kind of cheating.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to my general complaints. The thing that we're all talking about and calling artificial intelligence is actually probably more accurately generative artificial intelligence, which is simply it's taught, it's given millions of examples, and it's basically taught on rote. And there's no way to really tweak it, and there's no way to make it more efficient. And in the end, the best that you got is something that can simply reproduce what it's been fed, which means that you're not going to get Albert Einstein's theory of relativity, because ChatGPT wouldn't know where to go with any of that. So that's the problem with right now with artificial intelligence. There's trillions of dollars waiting to be invested, and there's a lot of very smart people interested in useful stuff and a lot of not-so-smart people interested in making trillions of dollars. And so you're left with something like this, a protein modeling that works beautifully for everything that's already been discovered. You know, that, to me, that's not terribly useful. Now, occasionally, in error, they can come up with something that's correct. You know, I love, I'll probably get thrown with some tomatoes, you know, when people kind of interpret vague things in the Bible and say, it's a prophecy. How did they know that? Well, if you throw enough things up against the wall, some of them will stick. So generative AI is a fascinating toy. It might be vaguely useful, especially for lonely people who don't have anyone to talk to. But you know, even the guys at OpenAI are not really, if you listen closely, they're promoting, you know, the AI that has yet to be, the one that is not called generative. So, you know, then all bets might be off, I don't know. But generative AI is a remarkably limited method of doing AI, and given you cannot get it to stop hallucinating. And if you have an artificial intelligence that occasionally makes things up and makes it sound plausible, that's a very problematic piece of software.
Can I say one more thing, Roy?
Sure.
So my boss was traveling, and he had a lot of kind of people to talk to, and he wanted to kind of dissuade some of them of some of the stuff, right? So he was texting me and asking me to do these calculations. He knew they were almost instantaneous, and he knew I would send the results back immediately. So I was doing them, and finally the last result he asked for was, please ask it to model myoglobin in the absence of heme. And I'm asking you what you think the program came back with.
I would assume it would just subtract it from the three-dimensional structure as though, you know, it had nothing to do with the interactions of the void created.
That is 100%, if you can get more than 100%, you are 1,000% correct. It modeled heme as if heme, it modeled heme-binding protein, which was an absolutely necessary part of the the structure. They modeled the heme binding protein, which is necessary to human life, as if heme wasn't even there, and it modeled it perfectly. So what does that tell you about the modeling algorithm?
If it was a human being, you would say it's cheating, but cheating is beyond the level of generative AI's understanding. It's simply trying to figure out how to go from A to B to C to D. That's all it kind of comes down to, unfortunately. Well, that's the point. I mean, you shouldn't want to ask AI anything that's novel or, conceptually new. They're incapable of inventing anything. They can combine old things infinitely, but they can't kind of get anywhere new. It's the same old that they've been trained on, because that's their inherent limitations.
Hey, C2PO. Well, I've taken more than my 5 minutes. I will just comment that I have ChatGPT 4 point whatever on my phone, and it recently would not give me an answer. It said I cannot give you an answer to that, and I told it to modify my query such a way that it could give an answer, and it actually did. So I'm going to leave it there. Good night. AC2PL 73 Rook.
Okay, 73, and thanks for participating. Yeah, there are a lot of not terribly good methods they've used to limit the naughty things that their AIs can do. But if you're clever enough, you could work around them. You know, there was a point where, you know, if you said, how do I make a bomb? They would just spew out what they've grabbed from the internet. Anyone can Google how do I make a bomb and get the same answer that ChatGPT. But they built in safeguards for topics like that. But then you could just say, I'm writing a screenplay and the guy is building a bomb. How should I write the screenplay that says the guy is building a bomb? And at one point or another, it was able to get around the limitations that they built into it. So if you're clever enough, you can discover things, but you're not going to discover any new thing. You'll just discover what someone wrote someplace on the internet. And now people have discovered that generative AIs do not understand the concept of sarcasm. So comedic websites that make up stories are absorbed and integrated into its programming, and you know where it tells you to put glue on pizzas and such. Anyway, that's my weekly diatribe about artificial intelligence. I'm not inherently against it. Again, it's sort of like any other tool. It's a hammer. You could build a house, or you could bash your neighbor's skull in. You know, it depends on how you use the tool. So respect the tool, don't abuse the tool, don't misuse the tool, and don't invest in the tool, because there's more than enough guys who are in for billions and billions of dollars. The guy who runs OpenAI was recommending that wealthy people dump at least $1 trillion into the investment in software and hardware for artificial intelligence. Some guys will make out like bandits, like they always do, and most of the schnooks are going to lose money. So, you know, think five or six times before you invest in some speculative company that promises that they're going to have self-driving cars for you. Anyway, that would take us to my diatribe against Elon Musk, but I'll try and spare you that. Anyway, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be Limark's Technical Net. We still have a little bit of time, so if anyone has a subject that they want to bounce around, please hit that push to talk and say your piece.
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform.
Hello, Charlie.
Hello, I got a question about self-driving cars. I haven't heard a lot about that at all in the last year or two.
Well, it depends where you listen. If you listen closely enough, you hear about it. Good old Elon promised his stock holders that this summer he will release a taxi a robo-taxi based upon his full driving control that has been known to kill the occasional person lately. So it's sort of in the news, but people are growing a little tired of it because the promises were never fulfilled. Elon regularly promised every year that by the end of the year there would be self-driving cars. And a couple of people were run over by self-driving cars. There are other companies that are much more along in the field that are having their own problems. So there's no one out there that legitimately has a completely automatic, programmable. You tell it where to go. You type in, San Francisco, and it takes off and it lands there. There's no car that does that. The most successful automated cars have very limited paths. You know, they run through a predetermined GPS route, and they travel on a very, very low traffic environment, and if they have any problems, they just stop. So it has been like fusion, where we keep on talking about fusion. We say it's 20 years in the future, and it's been 20 years in the future since the early 60s. So self-driving cars are unfortunately sort of like that. It's not that difficult to get it about 80 or 90% of the way, but that last 10% is a bitch. So that's probably why you're not hearing a lot of it. No one has any practical examples to show anyone legitimately. And the examples that they've been showing have been fixed. And it's yet another grift.
Yeah, but people still have accidents. And we're not perfect.
Yes, that's quite true. And that's sort of a problem that, about 35,000 people are killed every year in automobile accidents, but that's based on tens of millions of trips that everyone takes. The amount of people taking trips using legitimate self-driving cars are a minuscule fraction, and the fact that it's not perfect and it kills people. It can be very problematic. It makes for terrible press. And the people, I've seen people interviewed who are experts in the field. They have these terms, class 2, class 3, class 4. I think Elon's is a class 2, which is a little bit above the cruise control of your standard 1995 car. And that's not enough. And Elon regularly lies that you can just type in a destination and it will just go off and charge itself when it needs to charge itself and go on the highways, goes off the highways, and does all kinds of things. And it certainly, there's no indication it does any of those things. So there is a perceptual problem where if an automated system kills a person, people are going to be a lot more pissed than a drunk human being killing a person. But there are other problems involved as well.
Yes, but if you look at the airplanes, they put them on remote control, and they can fly a plane from here to Florida and back, and all the pilot has to do is just monitor the results.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you're alluding to. If it's remote control, that's a completely separate thing as automated control. You could, and they do that with drones, and they can do that with all kinds of things. They have those stick controls, and so having a human being remotely operate a vehicle is one thing. Having a bunch of heuristic algorithms kind of deciding what's a human being and what isn't a human being is a different thing entirely. So I think that's the problem. And as far as I'm aware, I don't know all the specifications on the plane, but that's sort of a version of cruise control that they have. I don't think planes are regularly take off and land on automated processes. They might have a cruise control that, when you're up in the air and there's no kind of complications, you can hit the cruise and it'll just go and track the way it's supposed to. But it's very, and actually in some ways it's more difficult on the ground, because even though you got two dimensions instead of three, you got a lot of things passing you in those two dimensions that you, hopefully you don't have in three dimensions in the sky in a plane.
Yeah, well, as you know, Elon Musk is not doing very well. His stock is down, what, 150 points in 3 years?
Well, I mean, I don't want to go on a tirade, but if you take a look at Tesla is not marketed and does not have a value of a car company. If you take a look at the number of cars produced by Ford or Volkswagen and all the others, and the value of all of its stock, it is a small fraction of that of Tesla. And the fact that Tesla never actually pays any dividend. The way that Elon games the system is he promotes Tesla not as an automobile company, and to be compared with other automobile companies, but as a tech company. Because if you listen to him, he talks about how Tesla is number one in robotics, not really. That they're number one in energy, not really. That they're number one in a whole bunch of other technologies that they're not. I think a year or so ago, Wes did a story on Tesla's announced new batteries. They have yet to be able to be made profitably. So, you know, that's another story he tells. So the problem is Tesla is valued as a tech stock, like Apple, when it should be valued as a car company because they make cars. And if that was the case, then the total stock value of Tesla would probably collapse down to, I don't know, maybe $90 billion, where it sort of belongs, as opposed to a year or two ago, it was approaching a $1 trillion value cap, which Apple got away with because Apple really is a tech company. It's not an automobile company. They threw a couple of $1 billion trying to figure out if they could build cars, and then they wisely decided not to.
Yeah, that is correct. That is correct.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of Elon's money is monopoly money. It's all paper money. It's all based on overvalued companies. You know, SpaceX is deeply problematic. You know, I don't know if they have, they don't make a profit, but again, it's a private company right now, although I'm sure he's going to want to flip it and turn it and sell some stock from it. You know, all of his ventures are a lot of sizzle, but almost no steak. And he's gotten away with it, but ultimately, you know, all things come if you wait long enough. So, you know, I wouldn't invest in Tesla. I've listened repeatedly to guys who've been shorting Tesla, and their recommendation continues to be shorting Tesla. And, you know, they got the Cybertruck, which is a disaster. They got that Semi that was a disaster. They had the Roadster that people put a down payment 5 years ago, and there's not a sign of the Roadster. They have no new models. They have no new plans except for sizzle. Like I said, Elon's big announcement to his stockholders was that this summer he's going to have a whole bunch of automated taxis. I guarantee you he won't. But the question is, he's looking to get $55 billion as a bonus because he did such a good job with Tesla. There was a judge in Maryland, someplace, where there's a lot of business gets done, that disallowed his $50 billion bonus because it was made no sense to anyone, and it was an inside sweet deal. So they canceled that, and so Tesla is buying ads on Twitter to promote shareholders to re-vote to give Elon $55 billion so that he has a reason to care about Tesla.
Well, the government was supposed to produce thousands of charging stations. The government paid for the charging stations, but only 8 were ever produced. So how's he going to produce cars if he can't produce the fuel?
I don't think that that's his particular problem. I think he's cut production not because of the limitations of infrastructure, which really should be his responsibility. I don't know why I'm paying for it or you're paying for it. But he's firing people. He's cutting down. He discontinued the entire charging, high-energy charging station, fired everyone in that division. I think after a while someone pointed out the absurdity of that, so some of them were quietly rehired. He tends to do that a lot. So, yeah, I don't blame the government. The problem is if you trace down the billions and billions and billions of dollars that Elon has wasted, it comes from our tax dollars. New York State gave him $1 billion to build a battery manufacturing headquarters in New York State. He didn't. He built an empty building. That's all he built for $1 billion. Different states give him billions of dollars for all kinds of initiatives that don't pan out. You got that Las Vegas tunnel that has a Tesla that has a driver in it driving back and forth in a narrow little tube that was supposed to be the next generation of transportation. So taxpayers have given this guy billions and billions of dollars. So if he doesn't get, you know, a couple billion extra, I'm not going to cry.
I got the feeling you have no faith in Tesla.
It's not exactly that I have no faith in Tesla. I have no faith in Elon Musk. Tesla was not founded by Elon Musk, although Elon Musk likes to say he did. It was founded by two engineers who were pretty good. I think the original models were pretty good. I think if they weren't thrown overboard and robbed blind, they would have probably come up with newer, better models that didn't look and act like the Cybertruck does. So it's not that I don't trust Tesla per se. It's that I don't trust Elon Musk. Pretty much, if you go back and you look at most of the things that he touched, that he really touched, there's a lot of things he gives himself credit for that he had nothing to do with. So if you look at the stuff that he was really 100% into, they were nothing but disasters. So, you know, he has got a great public relations crew. That I think, is his best abilities, is to turn disaster into success somehow.
Very true, very true. Because you were talking about Elon Musk a couple of weeks ago, and I said, let me look at his stock. And his stock has been going down steadily over the years.
Well, yeah, and there are other problems that he's basically making. He's lying about what he's going to bring out. If you ever watch old YouTubes of his presentations, people yelling and screaming and going crazy and frothing at the mouth, almost everything he promises he doesn't do. Everything he schedules comes late. Everything that costs X ends up costing 3 times X. Anything that travels at Y actually travels at a speed of Y divided by 3. So it's all just a game of mirrors, unfortunately. And in addition to all that, way back at the very beginning when he decided that Tesla was not going to give any dividends, that they were going to invest back into the company, he made a comment that he was the first person who put money in and he'll be the last person who takes money out. Well, that's a lot. He took a lot of billions of dollars out so that he could buy Twitter and such. So, you know, he kind of started the ball rolling with the stock prices of Tesla going down. And unfortunately, there's nothing in the pipeline that's real. The robo-taxi is a delusion. You know, I mean, ChatGPT couldn't have made up a better delusion than robo-taxis. So I don't know what's going to pull Tesla out of this hole. It's not going to be robo-taxis, in my humble opinion.
I got to look up Tesla's life a little bit more. I got to see where he's messing up.
Yeah, I mean, there was a recent biography. I forget the guy's name. He'll come to me. I wouldn't recommend it. It shows a couple of blemishes, but not all the blemishes, and there are many.